It's Mars on the Hudson. It's Cheers Goes to Harlem.
Get you something to drink, brother.
It's E.T. Rides the Underground Railroad.
Want to see me make all the white people disappear?
125th Street, thanks.
That was fantastic.
It's the brother from another planet.
Man is a fugitive from a chain gang.
He's got radar for a mind, removable eyes, and a lovable smile.
Give me five, brother.
White folks get strange all the time.
Welcome to the Dope Panic Radio Show. I'm Steve Benson. That's Paul Schultz. And nothing you are about to hear is true.
Word.
Apologies in advance for my voice. I got a little something going on in my throat. Couple of things. One, my kids had strep throat. And they were just taking the last of their antibiotics over the past couple of days. And yesterday morning, I get to work and my throat was hurting. And I had not been doing anything with my throat that would have caused it to hurt. So I was like, normally I would have just powered on through it, but I decided to go in to the clinic, get my throat swabbed, and the test was inconclusive. So they sent it off to the lab and put me on antibiotics. It still hurts, and I'm a little hoarse, as you can hear. Of course, I'm normally a little hoarse, but...
Yeah. That's going around.
That's my story. The other thing I decided to do, I've been trying to get my health under control. I went to the doctor a couple of months ago, and my blood pressure is a little borderline, you know? It's like 10 millimeters of mercury higher than it really should be. And my... blood glucose level is like 99 or 100. You know, it's not supposed to be over 100. So I've been eating better, but I've still been drinking every night. So
are you doing the paleo diet?
Yeah, right. The paleo. If paleo is a brand of vodka. So what I decided was, well, it doesn't do me a lot of good to do all this eating right business if I'm just going to keep pounding my liver, right?
Yeah.
It's pounding my liver like it stole something. So I decided I would do a little do not drink at home during the week.
So Steve goes out to bars.
Yeah. So where's Steve? I'll be at the Blind Owl Brewery if you need me. Well, I heard that on a Freakonomics episode where a guy was talking about how to change your behavior when you're kind of in a habit or you're in a pattern of behavior, best way to change. And there's like 7 or 8 or 152 different things that they've studied. And he said the one he chose, he said he was, and this is funny, he said he was... you know, he in college, he drank like everybody else, but then he stopped drinking so much when he started working. But then, you know, he gets married and like all of us, he starts drinking more gradually, you know, It's start, you know, go home and cook dinner with his wife, have a glass of wine, maybe two, you know, then have a glass of wine or two at dinner, and then another glass of wine or two to kick back after dinner. So next thing you know, he's drinking like a bottle and a half of wine a day. And they actually have a word for that in England, or a phrase. And it's called the middle-aged drunk. And I heard that, and he said he was in his mid-40s when it kicked in, and like he was about 52 when he was like, I gotta do something about this. And he decided that he would use what he was a behavioral researcher, behavioral scientist or whatever. And so one of the things that you can do is, if he said, one of the elements of when you want to change behavior is you have to have a really bright line. You can't be ambiguous. You can't be like, I really have to start drinking less, or I have to, you know, not have as much wine in the evenings. Well, how do you know? Right. I mean, did you have less? Did you not have less? How are you doing on that?
Yeah.
So he chose not drinking at home during the week. And that would work. And I like it because I have functions and stuff during the week. It's not like I'm going to, it'd be funny if I did, but just go to the bar every night. But I have functions and stuff. I have dad's club and, well, there's dad's club. I go to dad's club.
You do that quite a bit.
So. Yeah. I like that club. That's a good club. And, of course, on the weekends, you know, kick back, relax, have a brew. But so that's why my voice is off. And I had decided that, so my last drink was on Sunday, and then I got sick. I was like,
yeah,
well, I guess I probably would have not had anything to drink anyway, being as that I'm sick.
Or your body's rebelling against you because you're not drinking.
That's so. It. Saying hello, we haven't had a drinky poo. Usually we have one by now.
Speaking of blood pressure, years ago, before I was married, I went to the doctor for an allergy problem, and while I was there, the doctor took my blood pressure, or the nurse did, and the doctor comes in, he's looking over my papers, and he goes, "See, your blood pressure is a little high." I said, "Doc, I'm getting married in 3 days." He looks down at his paper and goes, "Your blood pressure's fine." But, you know.
I think I suspected that I had, I forget what they call it, like white coat syndrome or whatever. Like when I go into the doctor, I just figure I really don't like going to doctors, and I don't like going to dentists. I don't like it. I know it's very few people like look forward to it, but I just have this weird thing when I go in. I just feel really weird.
Except for my eye doctor. You know, if I go to see an eye doctor, it's a whole different story. But everything else, yeah, you're kicking and screaming.
That's a good point about the eye doctor. Although I usually feel like they're going to kiss me at some point. Because like right up in my face.
Better like this.
Like this? Or like this? Number one? Number two? But then Doc told me to get my own blood pressure cuff. So I own my own blood pressure cuff. And sure enough, I take it at different times of the day, whatever. It's the same as what he was measuring in the office. So, there you go.
Funny how that is.
If I have a stroke during this interview, you'll know what's going on. To continue the theme of age-related theme, went to see... Wait, hang on.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, I bet I know who this is. Hang on, I better get it. Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, who that? Who this?
Who you calling?
I'm calling Steve. Steve there.
This is Steve. Who is this?
What do you mean, who this? This is 130,000-year-old Mastodon.
Hey, it's 130,000-year-old mastodon. I was actually hoping it was SFJ.
Why you hoping it's SFJ? SFJ, don't be throwing down the wisdom like me.
Well, what kind of wisdom do you have, 130,000-year-old mastodon?
Well, I heard you was talking about getting old, and you worried about getting old.
How did you hear us talking about getting old? We're recording.
Never mind how I know. I'm 130,000 years old. I know things. Anyway, how old are you? How old are you?
How old am I?
Yeah, how old are you?
48.
I'm 130,000 years old.
Yeah, we know how old you are. You say it every day. It's in your name. What are you going to do? Are you going to change your name next year? 130,001? You're old mastodon.
I ain't got high blood pressure.
Shut up. I'm hanging up on him. Man, he's calling earlier and earlier.
I know, right?
Usually he waits till like...
It's like he knows when we're online for some mysterious reason.
He usually calls us. And he seems to know what we're saying. Wait a minute. The call is coming from your basement. Damn. What if he's living in my attic? And he's like...
And he's up to, and he's up and he's smoking, and that's why
that's right. Yeah, those of you that don't know, my wife has been complaining about smelling cigarette smoke, and you know, at odd times of the day. So yeah, maybe 130,000-year-old mastodon is following her around, and he smokes. He did say he smokes when we asked him what's the secret to living 130,000 mm-hmm. years. He did tell us he smokes mm-hmm. and drinks whiskey. I thought I was drinking all that whiskey. But like I said, I haven't had a drink since Sunday, and my whiskey's gone. Oh, 130,000-year-old mastodon. I notice he's not calling now.
That's right. He's like, oh, you hear like thumping, and he jumps out the window. And he's
My whiskey and my PBR are all missing.
Change the channel, Marge.
So we went and saw the band The Revolution.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of a funny thing to say, like, I saw The Revolution. I've seen The Revolution. And I was not put up against the wall.
Oh, was it televised?
Yeah. No. The Revolution will not be televised. It was a weird thing. I don't think anybody, for those of you that don't know, The Revolution was Prince's original backup band. In fact, they formed with Prince.
Right.
And if you've seen Purple Rain, you know the whole history, right?
Right.
But anyway, so. they disbanded in like 86, 87 and got back together a couple of times for mm-hmm. like reunion shows and whatnot. But The Revolution as a band was not, I mean, they got together once in a while, but were they really a band? Were they not a band?
Yeah, were they just the backup band, or were they, ladies and gentlemen, The Revolution, you know?
Yeah, that'd be like, who's going to be touring next, The Time?
yeah, or the Beaver Brown Band minus John McCafferty, whatever the hell his name was.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Tennessee Two.
Yeah.
Well, that's boring. But, yeah, I had a weird experience on several levels. One is I couldn't stop thinking, and I'm sure the people I was with who were bigger Prince fans than me got it. Okay, and I'm sure they didn't have this mm-hmm. feeling. So what I'm about to say is totally not legit at all and unfair. But I felt like I was watching a cover band, like, or a Prince tribute band.
Yeah, I wondered about that.
You know, Prince isn't singing.
Right.
They took turns singing. Like, the bass player would sing, and then the, what's her name, Wendy, the guitar player would sing, and then... They did have a guy come out who they never really said who he was. He would come out and sing a little bit.
They need like one of them Tupac like holograms.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that'd be good.
The purple one.
The purple one. But it felt weird. And I got to tell you, I don't know how close they were with Prince,
mm-hmm.
but all night long there was all this, like, they kept evoking Prince's memory, like, I want him to be able to hear you, and he feels your love, and, like, they cried and different things. And I was thinking, so let's say you're, what's another, there's got to be another band that used to be the backup band for somebody, but they're not now. What's something analogous to that? Somebody's now, let's say you're, something happens to Justin Timberlake, right? But he wasn't really the lead singer, was he?
Essentially, he was the one. But yeah, he wasn't the lead. They all sang.
So like if he died and they said, let's do a tour, right? You'd kind of go, okay, but why?
Right.
How many different reasons can we think of? Money? So I know it's probably sacrilege, and I guess I should stop being self-apologetic, but I couldn't help standing there think, I'm watching a cover band, and the only reason I could think of for them to be doing this is cashing in on Prince, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that would change my mind is if I found out that before he died, they were already planning on doing a tour with Prince.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Or Prince's dying words were, the revolution must play on.
Ugh. Yeah.
You know? Game. Blouses.
Yeah. Or Dave Chappelle, you know, stands in for him.
And not one word. They didn't say one word all night about Charlie Murphy, who recently passed. Mm-hmm. You would think they could have said something like, you know that story Charlie Murphy told on the Dave Chappelle show? God rest his soul. God rest Charlie Murphy's soul. All true. We can ball. Even Dr. Fink up there. Oh, and that guy's mental.
No,
I got to tell you.
Would you have felt differently had they, like, played ball instead of played instruments?
That would have been funny. If they just come out with basketball.
They come out like the Harlem Globetrotters, and it would come out, you know. They do their thing, and the music's playing in the background, you know.
that Dr. Fink guy?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you know who he is?
No. I'm not a big enough Prince fan to know much.
You're not a big The Revolution fan?
That's right. I'm not a big fan of The Revolution.
Well, one of the keyboard players is named, they call him Dr. Fink.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what he's supposed to be. I don't know if he's a dentist, a surgeon, a doctor of love. I don't know. A keyboard doctor. But he was wearing, I didn't know. He was called Dr. Fink. I'm not a big The Revolution fan either. I was just there. Who knows?
Maybe he has like an honorary doctorate or something, and he's like he's a preacher or something.
But he's wearing scrubs, and he's wearing a stethoscope, and he's got one of those face masks that you wear in surgery hanging mm-hmm. around his neck
mm-hmm.
on stage. And the entire time, I'm trying to figure out what it is. I didn't know. I couldn't tell it was scrubs. I couldn't tell what was hanging. I thought maybe, you know, they all looked old, right? And I thought maybe he had gotten a tracheotomy or something, and that was like his cancer kazoo or something like that, you know? Or maybe breathing air or something. I didn't know. So I asked the people I was with after the show, and they're like, oh, that was Dr. Fink. It was like, what sort of doctor is he? It's like, don't you think at some point when you get in your late 50s, you kind of, I mean, even Bret Michaels doesn't do the whole big hair thing when he, you know, he might still wear makeup. But
this bores me. Is anyone up for a game of basketball?
Why was there never a doctor in the Village People?
Let's see. What do we have? We had the construction worker, cowboy, Indian, police. It was all blue collar jobs. That would have been funny. There would be a boss. What kind of boss? Just a boss. You know? Yeah. Wearing a suit with a briefcase.
and a big cigar, you know.
Big cigar. Half bald. They got the male pattern baldness.
they're always half bald. You ever notice that?
Always. He's got the pinstripe suit and everything. What are you? Oh, I'm the boss. That's what I'm on. Oh, man, that's going to be my Halloween costume. I'm just going to wear a suit. And they'll be like, what are you supposed to be? I'll be like, I'm in the village people.
That's right.
I'm the village person that you never heard of. The boss.
What kind of, but an Indian isn't a blue collar job.
Really? Ask the Indians.
Well, they own casinos and stuff. That's not like a blue collar job. They're CEOs and stuff.
Can you imagine now a band trying to do that?
Oh, I'm sure there's a Village People tribute band somewhere out in Las Vegas.
Complete with the headdress and everything?
Sure. Because little old ladies love that ish.
I was having a conversation with my wife about cultural appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
And because it kind of zipped me off, the whole idea. Of course. And she's like, I know. She's like, what are we all supposed to just always only do what, we're just supposed to do what our people do and not do anything else? Like, we can't try other people's food.
You're right.
We can't try other people's hairstyles, you know?
And what is white people food anyway? I mean, honestly. Hamburgers?
Caviar, escargot.
Yeah, but that's like lobster. French stuff. So you'd be like taking from the French then.
That's cultural. My daughter from the back seat goes, that's called cultural diffusion. And we're like, what? She goes, yeah. You know, it's kind of like when the Persians took over Egypt and then some of the Persian culture diffused into the Egyptian culture. I was like, what grade are you in? It's like, sixth. I was like, my sixth grade history was kind of like memorized when Thomas Jefferson was president.
Dude, when we were in sixth grade, the library's encyclopedia set didn't know how the Vietnam War ended.
That's true.
I'm just throwing that out there.
Man, that's some crappy encyclopedias right
there.
Yeah,
they were horrible. They
didn't know. They probably didn't even have the... evacuation of Saigon in there.
Oh, there was I was reading up on space exploration. I just remember, like, towards the end of the whole, I mean, it was a large chunk of the book, but towards the end it was like, one day soon man will be on the moon and from and from there the stars. And it was like, okay. It was crazy.
It's like, no president has ever been impeached or resigned in modern history.
What a time.
Speaking of doctors, Dr. Fink and the doctor and the village people. wonder what kind of doctor he was. Neurosurgeon, I would guess.
Yeah, well, he would have the big, he'd be like the doctor from Hee Haw. He'd have the big silver disc on his forehead and...
Just to balance things out, like if you started the village people today, you could have the doctor, but you'd have to balance it out with the healthcare insurance person.
all those people would be the backup singers.
Yeah, that's right. And there'd be like 1,000 of them. And then behind them would be like 10,000 government administrators, like bureaucrats, because they all got to figure out, like, I don't know, I think that song might... a pre-existing condition. You can't sing that. Like, how do you know? What? We all have a pre-existing condition. It's called being born. And we all have a terminal illness. It's called life.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here to talk about a little thing called life.
Do, 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 do. Let's get crazy. Do, 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 do. Oh, man. What's my pre-existing condition? I think I have... Oh, I thought we should redo Johnny Dangerously. And the guy could go, I have a pre-existing condition. I'm psychotic. Is psychotic a pre-existing condition?
I would assume. I mean, I'm going to say, yeah. I mean, If you're taking medication for it, it's a condition, correct?
It's true. It is a condition. It did pre-exist. Let's say you're born with something. Is that a pre-existing condition? Not really, because it didn't exist before you were born. Well, maybe it did in your mother's womb.
See, we can't even figure this out, and there's a whole bunch of people a lot less smarter than we are trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, we're super smart. Well, you know who is also smart? Is the people that follow me on Facebook. So, you know what we ought to do?
What's that?
Make that our Facebook question of the week. Favorite pre-existing condition, go.
That's perfect.
Sometimes I feel like I hit the post button, and before my thumb leaves the screen, I've got like five comments.
I always feel self-conscious about that. If I'm sitting at my computer doing something, and you know, like a little thing pops up and tells me so and so, you know, just updated their status, and I click on it, and then I'm like, oh, that's funny, and I click on it, I'm like, oh man, did I click too soon? I mean, are they like looking at it going, what do you do with your day? You know, I just took my finger off the send button, and you're suddenly liking my picture.
You're waiting for me. A certain someone who has remained nameless for a long time used to, I think, get notifications like as soon as I would post something, because it would be like milliseconds.
Yeah.
Before there would be a like or a comment or whatever. So I have my Facebook up and I see your meme.
Which meme is that?
I believe a lot of conflict in the Wild West could have been avoided if cowboy architects had just made their towns big enough for everyone. This town ain't big enough for the two of us.
I about died when I saw that. I'm just like, yep. Why do they build these little bitty towns? There's nothing for like days in either direction, but they smash all the buildings together in one little area.
Right.
Spread it out a little bit, you know?
Spread it out, man.
Get a little of that manifest destiny. Spread it out a little bit.
There's not a town big enough for you and me. Like, you guys, man, need to learn to get along. So, we just had Mother's Day recently.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, I think it was. So, this was funny. This is one of those multiple people thinking of the same thing at the same time. We were sitting around after seeing the Revolution, and it was Mother's Day when we saw the Revolution, and somebody goes, they should call Father's Day Motherfucker's Day.
That's what we called it at the restaurant.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Okay.
I call it the day that ties and tools go on sale.
Ties and tools. So that came up, and Greg and I look at each other and we're like, I guess we're both motherfuckers. Yeah, I guess we are. And I said, well, I said, I wasn't really a motherfucker until after Elizabeth was born, right? And, you know.
Technically.
So I really wasn't a motherfucker until we conceived our second child. And they go, no, it was like any time you had sex in between there. I go, right. Like when we conceived our second child, when I became, then I got hit in the side of the head after I said that.
As well you should have.
But then today I'm listening to a podcast, and nobody will ever believe me that we had that conversation on Mother's Day. Today I'm listening to a podcast. Now I can't remember if it was Adam Carolla or might have been Do It Indie Radio Hour. Did you listen yet this week?
No, not yet. I didn't know if they posted one up yet. Is there one up already?
Yeah, it's up there. Okay. They do it on Tuesdays.
Is it Tuesday? Because typically I listen on Wednesdays, but I didn't see a post, so I couldn't get past all of the all the MP Cavalier romper pictures that are going up all over the place.
Romper.
So, no.
So, MP will correct us either way. He can let us know if I heard it on his show or Adam Carolla's show. But I thought that was kind of funny. But now you're telling me that it was thought of decades ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's funny.
Oh, just because it's old don't mean it ain't funny.
Well, I know. You would have thought it was funny enough for you to share it with me at some point.
Well, we didn't talk a lot back then. Prior to the show, we didn't talk a lot between visits.
That's true. We'd go 6 months. Like, what's going on with you? Oh, your hair is different. You'd be like, you got a new car again.
That still happens every time you visit.
It's true.
We're meandering. Maybe we should go to a break and
take a little break and come back and stop meandering. We'll do headlines when we get back.
Do not forsake me, oh my darling, on this our wedding day. Do not forsake me, oh my darling. Wait long. I do not know what fate awaits me. I only know I must be brave, and I must face a man who hates me. A liar, coward, a craven coward, a liar, coward in my grave. Oh, to be torn twixt love and duty, supposing I lose my fair haired beauty. Look at that big hand move along, near in high noon. He made a vow while in state's prison, vowed it would be my life or his. I'm not afraid of death, but oh, what will I do? Do not forsake me, oh my darling. You made that promise as a bride. Do not forsake me, oh my darling. Although you're grieving, I can't be leaving. Now that I need you by my side. Wait long, wait long, wait long.
Yeah, maybe I should make my rule, no drinking at home during the week except Wednesday nights.
That sounds like a plan.
So I'm drinking these super expensive La Croix. Sparkling water. We call them La Croix, and we've called them La Croix for years, and we've corrected people who call them La Croix and laughed at them. And then we looked it up on La Croix's website, and they say it's La Croix. We're like, well, I guess we've been sacked for correcting people. And now I can't stop calling it La Croix. It's crazy, dude, though. They're, like, not cheap, but we still buy them. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how you do that. You go to, like, you know, like, I'll be going to Kroger, and, like, I'll go in, like, the, you know, the more, you know, the natural side of the store. Yeah. They have all the organic stuff and the quasi-natural stuff.
No walls. It's like, there's grass growing.
Yeah, that's right.
Chicken coop for the eggs. This is our natural side of the store. Would you like milk? No, thank you.
No, thank you. They'll have all these interesting drinks, and you find yourself going, you'll take like a 4-pack of like bottles that are like the size of like, you know, those wax things that used to be full of Kool-Aid we used to drink. And it's like, $5 for 4 of them? Well, they're natural. That's not bad. What am I doing? Yeah. I've never drank these in my life, but I'm justifying it in my head, you know?
All right, how about a few headlines?
Sure.
This one comes to us from the BBC. Japanese princess to swap status for love. Japan considering 2018 abdication date. It's going to be pretty hard to misinterpret this one. But I'm guessing the Japanese princess found someone with more to offer, let's say, than whoever the arranged marriage was going to be to. I'll bet. You know how Japan loves, like, if you're, let's say you're a professional wrestler,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're not an A-list professional wrestler. You're kind of on that circuit that, what's his name was on.
Yeah. Like what Mickey Rourke was in the wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like what Mickey Rourke was on. Right. And, you should just pick up, move your ass to Japan.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause
you go to Japan, you'll be a star, especially if you're black. If you're a black two-bit, like, D-list professional wrestler, and you've got a physique and you've got height, go to Japan, dude. I'll bet that's what this princess, she, like, you know, Kawabe went over to Japan. His real name is not even Kawabe. It's like
Nathan.
It's Ricky Jones. Yeah, Nathan Jones. His mama called him Nate.
That's right.
He got into professional wrestling, and nothing more racist than professional wrestling sometimes, because they just go straight up for the stereotypes. For example, mm-hmm. Kawabe, he put that, like, the grass around his ankles, you know?
Yeah.
And the, like, grass around his biceps, the ring of grass, and the, like, got one of those plates and put in his lip, and, like, just a loincloth. He'd come out there and they'd play, like, African drums. I'm like, you shouldn't do that. That's racist. But then he went over and they called him Kawabe, like that. Ooh, yes. That's real creative, right? But he moves to Japan. He's a huge celebrity over there.
Yeah.
Because they've never seen anything like it. At least not since George Foreman went there with Fonzie and Captain Kirk. And Terry Bradshaw for that show, Better Late Than Never. Anyway, so Kawabe gets over there. Japanese princess sees him, like, she's her motorcade's driving through Tokyo. He's on the side of the street signing autographs. She stops the entire motorcade, gets out, walks over to him. Her bodyguards are freaking out, and she says, "Get in my car now. I want to marry you." Her dad, the emperor, says, "I will disown you, and you will not be part of the royal family anymore." And she says, "No problemo. I've got Kawabe." Then she finds out that he's not really rich, that he's just a celebrity in Japan, but he doesn't manage his money very well. He has no money. So now the Japanese princess has Kawabe, and they're poor, but they're happy.
the making of the next reality show.
I never understand that. You know, what's his name? Prince Andrew, I think it was. Queen Elizabeth's the second, like, brother or whoever, or cousin. Anyway, he was uncle. That's what it was. Hmm. When King George died, he was supposed to be the king. But he loved this woman who was not of royal descent. And so he was forbidden to marry her. And if he did, he'd have to abdicate the throne. So instead of being king, he decided to marry this woman and was exiled. That's how Queen Elizabeth II became queen. This guy lived in France for the rest of his life with this woman he married. I'm like, I could be really happy as king. Like, how do you even fall in love with somebody who's going to cause you to lose your chance to be the king? Or if you're the Japanese princess, how can you possibly fall in love with somebody? I just don't get it. Let's say you win the lottery and they go, hey, you won the lottery. As long as you marry somebody whose last name starts with an L, you'll be fine. And you haven't even met anybody yet, right? And they'll go, as soon as you're like 22, as soon as you turn 28, you get your $500 million. Just make sure you marry somebody whose last name starts with an L. I'd be like, that's the first question I'd ask on Tinder. I'd be like, last name start with an L? Nope. Swipe left or right or whichever. Oh, I don't even know which way to swipe.
Or just get them to change their last name.
And the Royals, they know it from the day they're born. So they don't even have an excuse. Like, yeah, I was 22, but I married my high school, ended up my high school sweetheart. We got back in touch. And, you know, it's like, no, you've known since you were born you get $500 bazillion in a castle when you turn a certain age. As long as you don't marry somebody outside of your little circle there, why are you even dating people outside? Why do you even... I don't get it. Somebody's going to need to explain this to me.
I would be looking really hard within my inner circle.
Yeah.
I mean...
I wouldn't even have to look that hard. I mean... All right. I'm talking about other people now. I am extremely fortunate to be married to the woman I'm married to. But I would say 80% of marriages out there, people are kind of miserable anyway. And
that was my experience.
People do marry, they think, for love. Like, they think, oh, this is the person. This is my one and only soulmate. There's nobody else for me. And then 60%. Oh, there you go. That's all you got to look at is statistics. 60%, 70% of marriages end up in divorce. And you're going to tell me that there's the one, right? And then you're... This Japanese princess is going to just sift away her royalty and her princessness. And she'll probably be divorced in 10 years because this guy's probably got, you know, he probably likes, you know, bestiality porn or something. And she doesn't even know it.
You know, going on the idea of the one, it's so ridiculous. I mean, my one is probably in like sub-Saharan Africa burning like, you know, dried up, you know, yak-ish.
Yeah.
You know, to keep warm.
Is that what you're into?
Yeah, that's what I'm into, man.
She's out there somewhere for me, burning dried up yak dung to stay warm. And she's got her feet are dirty.
That's right. Got the grass around her arms, you know.
Like she's probably and through a wild, weird cosmic coincidence, the guy she's married to is your ex-wife's one. All right. Well, I guess we did find a way to misinterpret that headline. All right.
Hey, this next one. You know, here, hold my beer.
Kawambe. Next one's from Wired. Scientists can't agree on what science even means anymore.
I was waiting for this.
God, I wanted to read that article, but I couldn't.
Well, you can read it after the show.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. I mean, I have no idea what this one might be about. Can't agree on what science even means anymore. I mean, what scientists are they asking who are like, well, I think it means this. No, no, it means that. How does that even work?
Okay, now, in this case, obviously... The people that are contemplating this, unlike the last batch, these are actually smarter than us. And if they can't figure it out, we're screwed.
The last batch, which was the, they were the insurance people
yes.
that are the Village People backup singers. Is that the last batch?
Yes. I've been seeing a lot of memes on Facebook about how, you know, you say you love science, but do you really know what science is? So this is becoming... I've been waiting for this to be a thing. As for what the article says, you know, it's like, just because because you know what a planet is doesn't mean you love science. You know, that kind of stuff is what these memes are basically saying. So I've been waiting for this to happen.
Well, Neil deGrasse Tyson was on Adam Carolla the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about this very thing where... He said our education system for the past 100 years or more, probably 100, 130 years, has not been teaching what science actually is. And and he said it occurred to him very strongly when Pluto was reclassified as not a planet. Mm-hmm. And there was this outcry, like, no, Pluto's a planet. You can't tell me it's not a planet. There are 9 planets, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, what have we done to people through our education system where they think stuff is just set in stone? It's like,
yeah,
you were taught there were 9 planets and there shall forever be 9 planets and there always have been 9 planets in our solar system and there'll never be a different number. It's like, really?
Right.
You know, they discovered Pluto. You do realize they discovered Pluto less than 100 years before you were taught this, right? So there were 8, and then there were 9, and then maybe there will be 7 at some point. But science is all about discovery and learning and expanding our knowledge of the universe and being willing to say, oops, we were wrong about that thing.
Right. Speaking of discovering and learning, those very same encyclopedia that we had, that, you know, didn't know how the Vietnam War ended and didn't, you know, wasn't sure when we'd reach the moon.
Yeah.
They also had paintings of dinosaurs dragging their tails.
Ah.
Yeah. The reason why I know this is because after I was out of Springfield, where, you know, our elementary school, when they redid and got more money for the library, apparently, we sort of ended up inheriting the encyclopedias.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, I would just get bored and be leafing through them. And I just remember seeing this dinosaur dragging its tail. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure they didn't do that because they found footprints. No tail dragging. And I'm sure that a 14-ton tail being dragged through mud would leave a trail as much as, you know, the feet would. But, yeah.
To go back and watch Jurassic Park. I mean, that's sort of like historical fiction, right?
Sure.
Well, you know what I find fascinating is the there's this movement with the fundamentalist Christians, the evangelicals, about, you know, they've always been kind of kooky and talking about the, you know, the world's only 6,000 years old or whatever, and prove it with the Bible, and you're like, well, what about artifacts? And they're like, bah. And then you go, well, what about dinosaurs and carbon dating? And they just go, it's not in my Bible, you know. And their argument would just always be, oh, the Bible. Well, what about these things? Well, yeah, that's your opinion. I'm like, well, no, not an opinion. But there's now a movement afoot, and it's been gaining steam over the last 5 or 10 years. This whole creationism science, like, and then you've got these creationist museums, and you've got these guys who are pseudoscientists, like pretending to be scientists, and giving what sort of sounds like a scientific explanation for all this stuff. And they always have a little bit of a smirk on their face. Like, they're like, oh these paleontologists, they think they know. Well, what about this? And then they give some kooky explanation as to how man and dinosaurs lived at the same time. And it's like, it usually involves Noah's Ark or something. And they talk about, oh, I know how I came across this. I was looking up mastodons because I was trying to figure out how 130,000-year-old mastodon is upending human history. It turns out we didn't realize that they found human evidence of humans next to 130,000-year-old mastodon.
Mm-hmm.
God, I can't believe he's not calling in. I think he really did leave.
Or maybe he finally, you know, he's old, so maybe he's like sleeping now.
Yeah, he's sleeping. He had dinner at 4:30, and now he's like, I can't even stay up late. I can't really do his voice. But,
not like I used to.
Yeah, I can't stay up late like I used to. God, I do a horrible impression. Anyway, he might call later. Who knows? So anyway, so the big deal is they scientists thought that the first time humans were in North America was 10 or 12,000 years ago, and now they're like, wait a minute, maybe they were here 130,000 years ago or maybe longer or whatever. But
right. I remember back in the 90s, I saw a couple of documentaries on human history, and these archaeologists and paleontologists and entomologists, whichever one it is, whichever gist it is, were coming up with these quote-unquote harebrained theories about the age of man, how long man's been on the earth. Mm. And they were just getting ripped to shreds by all these other scientists, like what deGrasse Tyson was talking about how it's not set in stone. You know, they could, their world was being rocked by these ridiculous claims that man was older than he is. And,
yeah.
But now it seems like, you know, 20 years later that, yeah, it's becoming the growing contention that, yeah, you know, but back then they were just considered heretics practically.
Well, that, you know, it's an interesting thing about science. It needs to be sort of schizophrenic.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to our schizophrenic listener.
Any of them.
It needs to be both skeptical and accepting of new ideas, right? Like, if it just took any time a scientist came up and said, hey, I found some evidence that, you know, there were people in North America 130,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And scientists said, oh, okay, hey, we just learned something new. You really don't want the scientific community doing that. You really want people going, that's ridiculous. There's like mounds of evidence to dispute that. Now, you're coming along with your one little piece of thing, and you're going to, you know, and it should take years.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just think it's an interesting thing that, I never figured it would come to this. But yeah, I mean, I've always felt, believed it and thought, you know, we are, as a species, are much older than we originally thought. And so, you know, maybe one day we'll find out the dinosaurs and the humans were actually, you know, hanging out together.
That's what I said at the Creation Museum.
Was it always a Southern guy?
And why do they always got to do the after every sentence? I don't get it. This next one's from TMZ. Taylor Swift surfaces at mom's house in Nashville. Doesn't say whose mom.
Maybe it's a restaurant.
And it doesn't say, they serve hot chicken.
That's right.
It also doesn't say, it says she surfaces, but it doesn't say, like, where was she? Was she underground? Was she hiding?
I'm totally going to do the Nessie picture with Taylor Swift coming up out of the water.
Taylor Swift surfacing.
Turns into Hunt for Red October.
They're drinking, she was sitting around at her mom's drinking mimosas. Because that's what you do. They're having brunch, drinking mimosas. And she goes, Mom, I just wanted to say happy. And Kanye West pops out of the cake. He goes, I'm going to let you finish saying happy birthday to your moms. But the best mom in the world was Florida on Good Times. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows Florida was the best moms. And I'm going to let you finish.
Damn, Kanye. That's my Florida impression.
When she found out, what's his name died, right?
Yes.
Kunta Kinte. When she found out Kunta Kinte died, damn.
And the whole rest of the world actually thought John Amos was dead because of that.
That's right.
Then he shows up 20 years later on, like, Die Hard 2, and we're like, wait a minute.
We thought he was dead. And then when I found out he wasn't dead, I was like, why did they kill him in the show? I loved him in the show.
I don't remember what the reason was.
They could have just had him continue working in Tennessee. They didn't have to kill him.
I love that you know so much about Good Times.
Dude, that's all we had to watch. Good times, one day at a time. Different Strokes. What else did we have back then?
The Jeffersons, Sanford and Son, Three's Company, All in the Family, MASH.
Man, we watched a lot of TV back
then. We really did. Well, we didn't. The internet wasn't invented back then. We didn't have anything else to do. Now, what do? On the internet, we sit around and watch reruns of The Jeffersons.
That's what I was going to say, is that they played a lot of reruns back in the day. Speaking of rerun.
What's happening?
What's happening?
Hey, hey, hey.
What's happening, Raj? The reason we know so much about those shows is we saw every episode like half a dozen times.
Mm-hmm.
My dad still watches Gunsmoke, and I swear he's seen every episode a couple of dozen times, but he still
watches. Oh, my God, dude. My dad, the same. I mean, he can do it chapter and verse, man. He knows every star that was ever on every episode. I mean, he is a Gunsmoke aficionado.
I would suggest we should get our dads together so they could talk about Gunsmoke. The last time our dads were together, one of them almost got shot.
There was almost Gunsmoke.
It was almost real Gunsmoke. I'll keep an eye on this place. I'll keep an eye on it now. There's not enough room in Springfield Township for the two of us. They should have just made Springfield Township bigger.
They just widened 375 West a little bit more, we'd have been fine.
That's right.
I like how we go full circle on that stuff.
That's what you call a callback.
That's right.
Change the channel, Marge!
Let's check in on our Facebook question of the week.
All right.
Here we are. Favorite pre-existing condition. Go. Jim Holland says, Turner Syndrome. Turner is someone named Ellie Turner. I don't know what he's talking about. Turner Syndrome. I don't know who Ellie Turner is. All right, Turner Syndrome. Justin Mull here, my brother-in-law, says life. Jim Holland, a twofer, says the human condition. Oh, here's a good one. Susan Sohaki says ED. Please tell me it's on the list, although Cialis and Viagra are probably super cheap, I suppose. Jim says, Jim's a pharmacist. He says they are about $35 per tablet. Although that's going to be coming down soon because they're both, I believe, going to be going to generic within the next year or so.
No pun intended.
Ah, I get it. Jessica Frank says being female. Jeff Woods says stroke, because he had one.
Oh, well, at least if we can laugh about it.
D says being your friend.
Aw.
That's pre-existing condition. That's his favorite one. That's nice. Mark Schechter says being born twins, joined at the head. Okay. Is that a pre-existing condition? Apparently. I wouldn't know. What's your favorite pre-existing condition? I still say mine is psychosis.
Is IBS a pre-existing condition? Because at what point in your life can you like claim IBS versus just being gassy?
I'm fascinated by the proliferation of acronyms for syndromes and diseases, and I blame pharmaceutical advertising.
You're probably right.
Because once you give it an acronym, it sounds like a real thing.
Yeah, and so, it turns every TV viewer into like armchair physicians because they can shout out. You know, well, one day my son we were watching TV and one of these commercials come on that gives you like 15 minutes of things that could be wrong with you know side effects for certain drugs. Mm-hmm. And at the end, it said something along the lines of, you know, ask your doctor if such and such may be right for you. And he's like, shouldn't the doctor already know about that? I'm just like, congratulations. At 13, you've outthought most adults that go into a doctor's office.
Well, I think it's a symptom of the depersonalization of healthcare and in the practice of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you don't have a relationship with your doctor. You go to the doctor and, you know, he sees you once every few years and he sees 20,000 different people. Mm-hmm. And you see him for about, you know, 3 or 4 minutes. So yeah. For him to recognize a pattern, you know, in your symptoms and come up with, oh, there's a medication that'll help that, is going to be impossible. So the pharmaceutical companies go, well, the public is going to have to be educated on our drug because there's no way. I mean, yes, we can go into the doctor's office, but there are 50 other pharmaceutical reps coming through there every day, and you have the same problem. The doctor's not going to think of it, and the person doesn't come in very often, so they're not going to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to start educating the public on, hey, if you have these symptoms, there is a treatment out there that might help you, but you have to go to the doctor to get it checked out. And I get it. Mm-hmm. I get why they advertise. It's not all about the almighty dollar. Although that's what drives it, there's also a good reason for it, which is people need to hear this stuff because their doctor's not going to think of it. But the cure sometimes being worse than the disease mm-hmm. causes people to think they have something they don't really have. And you can't tell me, the erectile dysfunction market, speaking of ED, is $11 or $12 billion globally.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me that many people have trouble getting it up. It is a recreational drug for the vast majority of people that take it.
Yes, because I know a couple of guys who take it, and it is not because they can't. It's because, like you said, it is a recreational drug.
It makes their experience more enjoyable, probably. I don't know. Maybe they last longer. I don't know, actually, to be honest with you. But I've never taken one.
I figure if the people that I know are doing it, they're probably a pretty good window into the whole picture.
Well, and the global market is like $12 billion. The legit market, meaning people that get a prescription and go get the actual drug, is about $5 billion. The rest, you know, $7 billion or so, is either counterfeit or a knockoff sold, like, on the street.
Uh-huh.
So that tells you at least, like, 60% of it is not legit.
Right.
So you just wonder what other... I mean, that's a weird example because there is a recreational aspect, but, you know, how many of these are like, ooh, I must have COPD. I must have IBS. I must have LMNOP. Who knows? WebMD does it too, man. I go to WebMD because my big toe hurts, and next thing you know, I'm going to die in the next 15 minutes.
That's why I stay away from that stuff.
I have toe cancer.
The very first thing that'll pop up is like, yeah, like you said, toe cancer. It's like, I didn't even know that was a thing. And you find out how many toe cancer sufferers there are, and there's no cure for it.
That's why Farrah Fawcett's a hero. Nobody knew there was butthole cancer until she got it.
That's true.
Now, if your butthole hurts, get that checked out. unless there's an assignable cause.
Yeah. Stop eating frozen burritos and things like that.
Hey, everybody. Before you get back to your life, go to DontPanicRadioShow.com. Give us a like and a share and a little rub behind the ear. We like that.
Hmm.
Tell your friends. Go to our Facebook page. You know, just spread the word because we do this every week for you, and we're working our non-cancerous buttholes off so that you can be entertained for 58 and a half minutes and then listen to rambling for the other 7 and a half. For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vincent, and nothing you just heard was true.
Few men have ever done what he has done, or even
adjustable.